Jeffrey Pritchett of the Church of Mavis Radio Show. Starting in March, we'll be going to a new time slot of Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm very happy to be going to this earlier time slot. I'll be more happier, so watch out, Mother Truckers. So remember to tune in to me, Beelzebub, and Wham to get your paranormal groove on. Can you dig it? Bringing you original guests, not regurgitating guests. So tune in, and drop out. Be there or be a dork square. We'll see you on Friday nights. And yeah, this is a Sanford Sun song. So that's how we get our groove on, baby.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select Other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
The UPRN family of shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRNTalkRadio.com along with 107.7 FM New Orleans. Broadcasting on multiple platforms like Live 365, Ustream, and Shoutcast has made the UPRN the longest-running, highly rated, and best source of quality, unique programming that is not afraid of the status quo in alternative media. This station has a solid course of shows and hosts that refuse to get stuck in a rut or be overrun by a groupthink mentality because
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our 3-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share
Welcome
them.
Everyone, to the...
False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Do you love sports? Okay, maybe just at least pay attention to sports. Then check out the Big Shoulder Sports Show, Tuesday night, 7 to 9 Eastern on UPRNTalkRadio.com and 107.7 FM out of New Orleans. JT, Justin, and I spill our guts about all things Cubs, White Sox, Blackhawks, Bulls, and Bears with no filter, the way nature intended sports to be heard. We also cover the national news in the sports world, but really, that's just because we have to. The Big Shoulder Sports Show, live Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on UPRNTalkRadio.com and 107.7 FM out of New Orleans. Or check out the podcast on Podbean, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Three guys saying words, making radio happen every week.
Hello, everyone. Come join the discussion Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on the new program, Global Newsmaker Focus, with co-hosts Vernell and Patrice. Our weekly interviews will feature newsmakers from a wide spectrum of fields of contemporary and global interest. Hope you'll be there.
Tune in to UFO Undercover Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to the October 10th, 2015 edition of Global Newsmaker Focus with L.A. Marzulli, author, lecturer, and filmmaker. The interview discussion features L.A.'s latest book, Days of Chaos, and the latest documentary of L.A. Marzulli and Richard Shaw, Watchers 9, Days of Chaos. For further information and details on L.A. Marzulli and his work, visit L.A.'s website at lamarzulli.net and L.A.'s blog at lamarzulli.wordpress.com. The Global Newsmaker Focus website can be found at globalnewsmakerfocus.com. Again, welcome everyone to today's program. Edition of Global Newsmaker Focus with guest L.A. Marzulli, author, lecturer, and filmmaker. The discussion features L.A.'s latest book, Days of Chaos, and the latest documentary of L.A. Marzulli. newsmakerfocus.com. Hello to my listeners and about my back as yes, ellipsites again. He is an author, lecturer, and filmmaker. He has penned at least 9 books. Best sellers list. IDE Thomas. Has been featured at conferences and churches, as well as on numerous national and international radio and television programs. Update, the Nephilim Trilogy, and several of L.A. Marzulli's books are available at lamarzulli.net/store and the Torah Codes, Into Darkness series and the Watcher series also are available at lamarzulli.net/store. Rennell, I know you want to welcome our guest L.A. as well.
Yes, we're so pleased you're able to join us today. We're very anxious to share your information. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here, ladies. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
L.A., we are so looking forward to hearing details on the new book and documentary. And, you know, I was so impressed by the information. And to let our office know, to let our audience know, indeed, your central focus in your research is the guidebook to the supernatural, the Holy Bible. L.A.,
So much is going on. What are your thoughts even today?
Well, it's interesting. There was a peace rally in Turkey. This is breaking news. And the number of dead, it's a twin bomb, twin explosions that went off targeting a peace rally in the Turkey. But let's just round it off to 100 people killed from the explosions and 186 wounded. And, you know, what we're looking at here, and this is why I wrote the book Days of Chaos. It's like there are those who will insist that everything's fine and it's all okay and we can all go back and start watching reality TV shows again and with a nice big six-pack in the refrigerator or something, or our favorite sports team and all those things that I just mentioned, specifically reality shows and basketball and football and baseball and all this other stuff. While there's nothing wrong with those things inherently, many people escape into those very items. And so they're afraid to look at what's going on globally. In fact, I just had a letter from a woman who said, L.A., I heard you on recently on a podcast, a radio show, whatever. And I ran out of the room screaming because they didn't want to hear it. And then I realized that everything that you said, I agreed with, but just didn't want to face it. And her question was, how do we face reality? And I agree with her. The bottom line is our media doesn't do the job. And so this bomb blast
like
in Ankara will be more than likely played
down.
The problem is by the mainstream media. The problem is in Iraq and other places about every 8 to 14 days with almost clock-like precision. There's another suicide bomber, bomb blast, scores of people are killed. And as long as it's not here, it's okay. But what Americans need to understand is it's coming here because the people who do this are Islamists. That's who's doing it. And it's either ISIS or the Kurds or whoever, but they are radical Islamists. And how do we know who's radical and who isn't? And this is the problem here. This is why our administration is going to allow 20,000 Syrian refugees. How do we know who these people are? We don't. What's going on in Europe right now is, in my opinion, the Islamization of Europe, which used to be a Christian country. And when you allow upwards of 1 million so-called refugees from Iraq and Syria, most of which, by the way, are men under 30 years old. So when you allow these people to come in, already it's starting. Already they're calling for Sharia. They don't want to adopt the culture of the country. They want that country to adapt Sharia law. And basically, what in my opinion, what we're looking at is what Charles Martel in the Battle of Tours was able to turn the tide of the Muslim invasion coming up, which would have completely changed Europe. And then, of course, what happened at the gates of Vienna hundreds of years ago. Again, stopping the hordes of Muslims trying to come in. And make no mistake about it, having 800,000 refugees is an invasion. And there's no way these countries can assimilate that. And what's happening is it's changing the very culture of Europe as we once knew it. And now there's pushback, and of course they call them the far right wing. Well, it's not the far right wing. How about it's just people that understand what's going on? Why do they have to be labeled far right wing? In other words, is it supposed to be good to allow people to come in here and change our times, our values, our culture, our way of life? Is that somehow, is that left wing? Is that good? Well, these people are pushing back in these countries. And again, this all ties back into Days of Chaos. And the heading that this would be under would be two. A chapter on wars and rumors of wars, and of course, troublesome times. These are troublesome times, and there's no way to fix this. And I want to add one thing, and I blogged about this, lamarzulli.wordpress.com. Saudi Arabia has built a tent city in their country, in Saudi Arabia, that will, and by the way, it's an air-conditioned tent city, so it's a pretty pricey deal. But the Saudis can afford it, because they're the number one exporter of oil on the globe. And as we all know, oil is the lifeblood of the global economy. Everything runs on oil. So the Saudis built this huge air-conditioned tent city that will hold upwards of 3 million people. Take a guess how many refugees from Iraq and Syria the Saudis are taking in. Anyone want to put a number on that? 10,000? 500,000? How many refugees? Zero. Zero refugees. And you know what their excuse is? Well, we don't know who the terrorists are. So here are the Saudis not taking any refugees, but they turned to the Germans and said, well, we will come to your country and build 200 mosques for you. That's their answer. They want to come to Germany. I'm not making this stuff up.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Come to Germany and build 200 mosques. It's toast.
Pardon the interruption, Ellie. Yes, I've seen those articles. And indeed, just as you said, those details are fully accurate. Now, on the rumors of war, you were mentioning that, and of course your points on the insistence of by the Muslims of an Islamic global caliphate and have the world governed by Sharia law definitely is right on point. One helpful point for our listeners, you believe, L.A., the reemergence of Israel as a state is critical to understanding current developments with an accurate biblical worldview. You've mentioned as well that Israel is the lone democracy in the Middle East, and that will be the case since the Arabs culturally cannot appreciate a Jeffersonian democratic paradigm. You were mentioning as well that a past guest of yours, Dan Gordon, on Acceleration Radio, Mr. Gordon is a captain in the IDF, also an American citizen as well as an Israeli citizen, and you were discussing with Dan Gordon how Israel is now facing an unknown as to who Israel must face in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Dan said monthly, you said on a day-by-day basis as these groups change and the threat morphs.
You know, Patrice, what I love about coming on your show is that you really do your homework. I mean, you really dig in and get to the meat of you know, what I'm writing about. And I have a very sneaky suspicion you do that with everyone that you interview. My hat is off to you. That's a great summation of what we talk about in the wars and rumors of wars. But yes, first of all, we need to understand that in the biblical narrative, more is said about the regathering and the reestablishment of Israel in its ancient homeland and in regard to the last days and end times than any other really topic in the biblical narrative. The regathering of Israel was prophesied thousands of years ago, and in 1948 it became a reality. Jerusalem, going back 200 years, nobody cared about Jerusalem. The place had been denuded. The Turks had come in and completely denuded the place. I mean, it was like people have no idea what it was like 200 years ago. Read Mark Twain's account of when he's in what they call the Holy Land. And it's completely denuded, sleepy, nothing's going on. No one could care less about Jerusalem. In fact, I have a pamphlet from the 20s where the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem stated unequivocally, I mean, I've got a reproduction of the pamphlet from the 1920s stating that the Temple Mount is the last remains of what was Solomon's Temple built by the Jews. I mean, it's right out there. But in 2015, all that's been completely, completely eradicated. And now that the Muslims insist that the Muslims built the temple. So this is what's going on here. And there's also a prophecy that states Jerusalem will be a cup of trembling to all the nations. This prophecy goes back thousands of years. In the latter days, Jerusalem will be a cup of trembling to all the nations. And this is exactly what we're seeing. The Catholic Church wants a piece of Jerusalem. The Muslims have declared it their capital. The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt declared that Jerusalem would be the capital of a newly formed and newly created United Arab States. Of course, the Muslim Brotherhood they elected Morsi to the presidency of Egypt after they overthrew Mubarak, but they realized that they basically got one tyrant for another. And Morsi wanted Sharia law, and the people revolted, the military revolted. Morsi is now in jail facing execution, and the Muslim Brotherhood once again has gone underground. But the clips of this, and I show it, where thousands of people in Tahrir Square. Tahrir Square is in Cairo, and it's where everybody assembles. And all these Islamists these Muslims are shouting at the top of their lungs, to Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. I'll say it again. To Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. And so everything is shaping up exactly the way the prophetic biblical narrative tells us it's supposed to shape up in the latter days. And, you know, I understand that a lot of folks don't want to deal with this, as we talked about. They'd rather, you know, keep track of the football games and the scores and, you know, college basketball and who's playing the World Series and yada, yada, yada. I get that. I understand that. But we are living in the most tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times that I have ever witnessed in my 65 years on this planet. And it's not getting any better. It's not getting any better. In fact, it's reaching what I would call critical mass. She's going to blow, Captain. I mean, like Scotty used to say with the lithium crystals in Star Trek, she's going to blow. It can't go on like this. Something's got to give. And, you know, you were talking about Israel being the only democracy in the Middle East. And you're right. In Islam, there's no springboard to Jeffersonian democracy. It doesn't exist in Islam. They have Sharia, and they'll always default to Sharia. When push comes to shove, that's what Islam will default to. Where in Christianity, a strong case can be made that the Protestant Reformation gave birth to the democratic ideals that we hold very close and at heart to in this country. You can do your own research on that, and you will see and find out that the springboard for it literally is the Protestant Reformation. That's what sets everything apart. And, of course, that's when Luther decided that what was happening in Catholicism was crazy, and rightfully so. When you go back hundreds of years, the excesses in Catholicism, some of that's been reformed, but the excesses that Luther pointed out were absolutely through the roof. And that's why he attacked or nailed his 92 thesis to the church door, and he needed to do that. And so those reformers who came after him, John Locke in particular, began to pen works like Law is King, Lex Rex, instead of Rex Lex. Law is King, which is pivotal, stating that, in other words, what the Europeans and the feudal system, and even within the church, and some of that within the church has not changed, papal infallibility. Where's that come from? It's man-made. It's a made-up deal. So whatever the Pope says, somehow he's infallible, it's nonsense. It's absolutely nonsensical, in my opinion. But what we have here is that the king could arbitrarily decide whatever he wanted to do, and that became the law. And what was pivotal, which led to Jeffersonian democracy, which led to the rebellion, because that's what it was, of the 13 colonies, which led to our Declaration of Independence from the tyranny that we were under, taxation without representation. Oh, gee, are we under that again? Don't get me started. But what led to it was the fact that the king was just arbitrarily deciding what he was going to do. So, and that became a law of the land. So Locke and others said, no, we're not doing that anymore. Law will be king. And this law will be made by a group of people, men and women. So fast forwarding once again, days of chaos. Here we are. Marriage between a man and a woman has been sacrosanct in Western society, literally, for thousands of years. It's been the way it works, period. That's how it works. People get married, they have children, a man and a woman. Now, there's divorce, there's wars, I get all that. But ideally, what is good for children is a man and a woman, a mother and a father. And that is the nexus, if I can use that word, for the family unit. And isn't it interesting that that's been the bulwark and has been something which, of course, is sacrosanct in Western civilization for thousands and thousands of years. Five people on the Supreme Court, by judicial fiat, decided that gay marriage will now become the law of the land. And SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States, is not allowed to do that. They are not allowed to create laws. They are allowed to, you know, decide what's what, but they are not allowed by judicial fiat to go against the will of the people like that. So, I mean, we've crossed lines here in this country and that I've never seen. That's one of them. Globally, with over 1 billion aborted babies on the planet, huge, huge line crossed in the sand. But getting back to wars and rumors of wars, what we see now is the onset of Tsar Vladimir Putin. And I call him a czar because he's not a communist. He's a czarist. And what he wants to do is return Russia to her former glory. And that's what all this is about. And so what Tsar Vladimir is doing in the Middle East is unprecedented. And the United States is nowhere to be seen. Obama, as Bill O'Reilly would say, is hiding under his desk for the most part. And, you know, playing another round of golf or taking another selfie in the White House or whatever. Meanwhile, the Russians have about 150,000 men in the area. Remember, Syria has a warm water port, and that's the prize here, is the warm water port for the Ruskies. That's what they want. Coupled with this is a recent find in Israel of an oil and gas field worth trillions and trillions of dollars. So Russia exports oil, and it's number two next to the Saudis on a global level. And combined with this, and this is what people need to understand, is the geopolitical global machinations here are through the roof. And what I mean by that is the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, these nations comprise what's known as the BRICS nations. That's the anagram. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. And what they are trying to do is move the global default currency from the American U.S. petrodollar to the Chinese yuan. This is why oil went down to under, well, I'm not sure what it is today, but definitely under $60 a barrel, and it's probably even lower than that as we speak. And the reason for this is, again, it was to whack the Ruskies, because the Russians export more oil than anybody else except for the Saudis. So when we lower the price of oil on a global scale, that hurts the Russians economically, and that was very calculated. Because, again, the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, formed a pact and began to actually start BRICS. I mean, they put billions of dollars into this fund, and they are ready to move the world off the U.S. petrodollar. So what we see happening in the Middle East, again, it's a major move by Tsar Vladimir. Combined with that is the Chinese have just shown up with their ships into the Mediterranean. That is absolutely unprecedented. The Chinese has not been involved in the Middle East since the Mongol hordes rode in about 800 years ago. So what we see happening in the Middle East is absolutely unprecedented. Is this World War III? This is precisely what the prophetic biblical narrative tells us, that there will be wars and rumors of war. And this is exactly what's happening in real time right now, even as I speak.
Very powerful words, L.A. And, your discussion, and lest I forget, to our listeners, in the documentary, Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, there's excellent footage and discussion of the building of the third temple, the rebuilding of the temple on the Jerusalem Mount. Several of the topics in that documentary seem absolutely fascinating, as indeed is L.A.'s book, also very, very informative. Now, L.A., you mentioned regarding the Iranian Nuclear Review. I'm sorry. We have our own Iranian Nuclear Review Act passed by Congress, but what I meant to say was in the Iran Nuclear Agreement with the P1 plus 5 powers, you were mentioning its great danger to the security of the world, Israel, U.S., the entire world. You further have some great discussions on the threatening Iranian potential of choking the Strait of Hormuz and the Gulf of Tears in a war scenario.
Well, what's happening, most of the oil comes down and is dispersed through the world. About 35% to 40% of the world's oil comes through the Strait of Hormuz, which is controlled by the Iranians, and another waterway to the west, which is called the Gate of Tears. Both of these are checkpoints now controlled by the Iranians. And I have put forth in countless blogs that the Iranians have really one strategic move that they can do, which is a game changer. And that would be to use a radiological weapon. In other words, this is what you do. You go in and you get a bunch of boats, tankers, whatever, and you make a blockade. You evacuate everybody off the ships, and then you detonate what is known as a dirty bomb. A dirty bomb is just uranium gets depleted so it won't explode like Hiroshima or Nagasaki. It's more like a Chernobyl event or a Fukushima event. It completely contaminates the area with radioactivity. And how would you then move those boats out of the blockade? Well, you wouldn't. That's certainly a stratagem that the Iranians could use. Apparently, and this is just intel that we've heard. I have not been able to vet it, but I'm sure our State Department has with satellites that the Iranian side of the Strait of Hormuz is bristling with every type of missile one can imagine. And so this is where we are in 2015. And now that the Houthi rebels in Yemen control the Strait or the Gate of Tyr, another very narrow waterway in which a lot of the oil tankers come through, shuttling oil from the Middle East. And of course, the Houthis are the proxy army of the Iranians. So what we see happening here is that everything is poised for a series of cascading events if there is a war in the Middle East. And it certainly appears like there will be. Now that Tsar Vladimir and the Ruskis are there, and they've also given the Iranians the S-300 missile defense system, which can shoot down Israeli planes. So everything, the ante is ratcheted up in ways that I've never seen it, Therese. I mean, I've never seen it, again, I'll use the words, tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented. Is this the stage being set for World War III? It certainly looks like it. There's another prophecy, the Ezekiel 38 prophecy, which talks about a group of nations that go up against Israel in the latter days. And it's amazing when you actually read Ezekiel 38 and 39, it is just really telling, because what it does is it shows us that these nations, and by the way, Iran, Persia, is listed in that group. And as Chuck Mister would say, there's not an Arab in the bunch. There's not. These are all nations that are not Arab nations. Certainly Russia is not an Arab nation, nor is the Iranians. They are, what's the word I'm thinking of? Oh, come on. Aryans. So they are not Arabs at all. They are Muslim, but they are not Arabs. They're completely different. And so basically of Aryan stock. So what we see happening in the Middle East, Israel is now surrounded by those neighbors who pose a direct existential threat to her. Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, Bibi stood up at the UN last week and delivered what I would call an historic speech. Certainly, it'll go down in history as every bit as important as FDR. Today is a day that will live in infamy, or Churchill's speech. We will fight them in the hedgerows, on the beaches, all that. And what he basically said, and he glared at the audience for 45 seconds. He glared at the audience and said nothing. And what he said, today they're coming for my country, but tomorrow they'll come for yours. And he's right. Bibi knows of what he speaks. And the Islamists will not rest until they have rid what is now Israel of every Jew. And, of course, we know that this is prophetic. This has been stated in the biblical prophetic narrative for thousands of years. And we know what happens, that they will not move Israel. They will not move the Jews from Israel. Israel is there, just like the prophecy said. Once it's been regathered from the four corners of the earth, it will stay there forever, never to be removed from that land. And here's something for the naysayers to think about, and those of who are of the supersessionist bent or the replacement theology bent, that somehow the church has received all the promises of Israel, and Israel doesn't matter anymore, and they've forfeited their promises. That's just a bunch of hooey, bunch of nonsense. Yeshua, Jesus, returns on the Mount of Olives. He doesn't come to Detroit. He doesn't show up in Phoenix or Moscow or Paris. He shows up in Jerusalem, and that should be extremely telling to anyone who's interested in the prophetic narrative.
So well said. You know, your book as well mentions the great dangers facing Israel with Hezbollah to the north and Hamas to the south, mm-hmm. and, of course, with ISIL and Iran. What a combination of extremely dangerous enemies. Of course, Israel is such a brave nation. They definitely would defend themselves strongly. Also, you mentioned as well that Isaiah 17 prophecy has never been fulfilled. You mentioned that Damascus is the oldest inhabited city on the planet. How interesting.
Well, it is. And what we see here, and this is what's so alarming, if I can use those words, Bashar al-Assad has been in this bloody civil war for going on 5 years. I mean, that's what it really is. Upwards of 300,000 people have been slaughtered and tortured in the most barbaric of ways. In fact, you know, our media never does its job anymore, so we don't see pictures of this stuff. But recently in New York City, there was an exhibit of full-color pictures showing the devastation and the torture and what's going on in Syria, and people were revolted by what they see. Just like in World War II, when the concentration camps were opened up and everyone saw what the Nazis were up to, the world was horrified at what they were looking at. Well, Syria, 300,000 people, many civilians have been slaughtered, killed, tortured in the most brutal of ways since this whole Arab Spring to oust Bashar al-Assad has happened. And Assad somehow has tenaciously been holding on to the reins of power. However, with the ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, and what's interesting about this, our intel months ago stated that ISIS, ISIL, was a creation of the CIA. They were trained in Jordan. Their whole purpose was to overthrow Bashar al-Assad and set up another government. It backfired because these guys went rogue. They had all the equipment, and you can see they have all new equipment. They all know how to use all American weaponry, and they've just got great caches of all of the weapons that were left there. And of course, they've cut great swaths throughout the Middle East. So what's happening here is Bashar al-Assad turned to his friend Tsar Vladimir and said, "We're going down. Unless you come and help, they're going to overthrow me." And obviously there's some sort of a quid pro quo going on here, because no one does this stuff for free, and because of altruism, that's for sure. And so there's all sorts of political deals behind the curtain that we don't know about. But one thing for sure, will the Russians wind up controlling Syria? It's very, very interesting. And so with the idea that ISIS was about to completely control Syria, and they hold great swaths of Syria, that's when Putin entered the fray, along with Chinese warships and the Iranians also. Remember, the Iranians are the Shia bent of Islam, and ISIS is all Sunni. So it's once again the 1,300-year disparate belief systems between Sunni and Shia Muslim, and that's why they blow each other up continually. So after they're done blowing up the Christians and the Jews, they go after each other, because that's the way it is. I mean, it's you can't make this stuff up. It's the craziest bunch of people on the planet. And unfortunately, it's spawned, and you can say what you want, that somehow it's spawned from Islam, but nobody else is doing this stuff. Nobody else on the planet blows up, 100 people at a peace rally in Ankara. And by the way, the two people in the Boston bombing, they were Muslims. They were radicals. So that's what's going on here. You got to call a spade a spade.
Very well said, L.A. You reference as well in your book the tension between the Saudi Arabian coalition with other Arab states and the Shiite coalition, that Sunni fear of the Shiites taking control of Mecca and Medina.
Well, that's a very real fear. The Iranians are licking their chops. They are going nuclear, thanks to our leadership, if you want to call it that, and John Swift Boat Kerry trying, if Allah wills it, when he puts his hands together and says, "If Allah wills it," what are you, a closet Muslim now, Mr. Kerry? If Allah wills it, what? What planet am I on? Who are these so-called leaders in the United States of America? Iran, more than likely, already has the bomb. And the idea of sanctions being lifted and then arming the Iranians with billions of dollars is just the most ridiculous deal on the face of the earth. It's absolutely nonsense. And yet the powers that be in our country are just running to do this. And this is why Netanyahu stood up and said this is a very bad deal. Mr. President. The Iranians want Mecca and Medina. That's their end goal. And, of course, coupled with that is the removal of the Jews. I mean, when Khomeini, the supreme leader of the Iranians, stands up just last week and says something, within 25 years, Israel will no longer exist. What he's telling us is that's their timetable. That's the outside timetable, 25 years. They're hoping to get it done a lot sooner. And, you know, it's interesting. There is a scripture in the Bible, in the biblical narrative, specifically from Ezekiel chapter 38, 39. And it says, living that when Israel was gathered back, they are living securely without bars and gates and walls. And, you know, I've gone around this over and over and over again with different, you know, people that have different interpretation. When you go to Tel Aviv, there are no bars, gates, or walls in Tel Aviv. It doesn't exist. And even though Jerusalem is the capital, Tel Aviv is by far the largest Israeli city. And in some ways, it is like Sodom and Gomorrah. But it dwells without bars and gates and walls. And in my opinion, what the prophet is trying to tell us 2,500 years ago is that in the ancient world, in order to survive, if you had a city, you put the biggest, highest, thickest, strongest wall you possibly could around your city to prevent the roving Mongol hordes or whoever from coming in, killing your men, raping your women, and taking your children as slaves. That's how the ancient world existed. And we would exist that way today, except with the invention of the airplane, which rendered that style of warfare totally moot. In other words, the Industrial Revolution and mechanized warfare, and specifically with the advent of the airplane, that's it, it's over. That's why trench warfare doesn't work anymore, because all you got to do is just, you know, strafe the trenches with your airplanes. It doesn't work anymore. So everything changed with the advent of the airplane, and that's exactly what we see happening, which, in my opinion, fulfills those words of the prophet Ezekiel, a land, a people dwelling in safety without bars and gates and walls, and that's exactly what we see. So that points back once again to the prophetic narrative, and it makes me wonder whether we're in the window of time, whether we're actually going to see the Ezekiel 38-39 war manifest, or the Isaiah 17 scenario, which states emphatically that Damascus will become a ruinous heap. Now, that's never happened before. Damascus is the oldest and longest inhabited city on the planet, literally, on the planet. And so Damascus becomes a ruinous heap. You can make a case that even now it's being destroyed and torn apart brick by brick, which, again, Patrice, you go back 7 or 8 years, and there is no Arab Spring. There is no Arab Spring. And, you know, yeah, you've got intifadas, these uprisings in Israel. Yasser Arafat was responsible for them. And right now, you've got stabbing deaths. In other words, these crazy people come running up in Israel and just stab a Jew. You know? I mean, you know, kill a commie for Christ. I mean, it's insane, right? They got knives. They take the knife out of the burqa, and they start stabbing people. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. And this is why there's such tension on the Temple Mount. Look, people have two choices. They can get the book, read it for themselves, understand what's going on, or pretend nothing is going on and go back to watching reality TV. But we are in the days of chaos, Patrice. I think I've made my case in this first hour pretty well.
You have indeed very strong argument elements. You know, your book also references the one world government. You want to decry the fact that some pastors now aren't advising their church members of important political developments for fear of losing their 501c3 status. Also, you mentioned what's happening in America, that trend toward socialism, and also you mentioned George Soros' influence. Fascinating political commentary there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We are looking at the formation of a new world order on some level. I was lamenting to my friend yesterday that I'm an entrepreneur. I have a publishing company. I also have a ministry called the Church Alliance, which is a 501c3. The two are totally separate entities. The Church Alliance is for when people want to donate to the research, they can get a tax write-off for that because that's how things are set up. But and it's a 501c3. I get that, and it's great. But my publishing company, Spiral of Life, is in business for profit, and we the Watcher series and all the books that we publish and everything else, we make a profit. Well, when I take all the risks and invest my money and spend my hard-earned labor and I make a profit, there's my government putting an onerous tax burden on me and not allowing me to keep a substantial portion of my money that I've earned, and I have to hand it over to the government. Meanwhile, the same government with false largesse, Obama gave me a cell phone in the last election, and this woman gets on, and this is her worldview, which is alarming. It doesn't matter whether you're on food stamps or welfare or disability. That's her worldview, Patrice. That's what she's saying. Obama gave me a cell phone. The government handed her a cell phone. Disability, welfare, food stamps. What about getting an education so you can go out and work? Who wants to be on the public dole? Who wants to be dependent on welfare? Who wants to be part of this ridiculous system that we're in, where those of us who work and take the risks somehow have to give in, like Obama says, just a little bit more. We have to give just a little bit more so that Obama can give this woman and others like her a free cell phone. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This is Rome all over again. This is bread and circus. There's no difference. This is the rotting decay of what was once a great nation. And we are so divided politically, religiously, and every other way. And the fact that we're even having, the fact that millions and millions of people are on food stamps. I think it's like 60 million people on food stamps. The fact that 90 million people are out of the workforce is very telling, extremely telling. And this is not a good thing, Patrice. It's not. I'm not a happy camper.
You know, very powerful and thoughtfully expressed comments there. And I like your term for it as well, the managed agenda. Now, I don't...
That's actually Chuck Missler's term. That Chuck came up with that, the managed agenda. And I always give him credit where credit is due. And that's Chuck's verbiage.
Mm-hmm. Well, great political discussion there in your book. And I think we're probably about, 45 minutes into the interview. I'd like to mention some more topics, but I also don't want to take advantage of your graciousness and time appearing here today. Now, chapter 5, there's a great discussion on the Fukushima disaster. You know, with its developments, it's reminding me of that biblical concept of a third of the waters of the planet being made bitter or being polluted.
That's right. And, you know, we read those prophecies and we say to ourselves, well, that'll never happen. I mean, that just must be allegory or metaphor, right? And then we hear about Fukushima. Well, actually, we don't hear about Fukushima. The press rarely covers it here. We are looking at an extinction level event, or what could become an extinction level event. What I mean by that is the 9.1 earthquake, which happened several years ago off the east coast of Japan, impacted the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant right on the coast of Japan in ways that we still really don't understand and really don't know the gravity of the situation. The Japanese government lied, openly lied. TEPCO lied to the people, the Japanese people, to the people of the world. We know that millions of gallons of radioactive water are being dumped into the Pacific Ocean on a daily basis. At some point, God forbid, if there's another earthquake and that crippled reactor 4 and the other reactors goes sliding into the Pacific, that's a major game changer. And according to some of the intel that I've got, Reactor 4 is already in meltdown. It's you know, burning. It's going through to China. That's it. So they keep trying to cool the reactors, and this is why millions and millions of gallons of water every day are dumped into the Pacific. And now the chickens have come home to roost. And it's a grave concern of mine. It's something that I'm always monitoring Fukushima. There's a great site, FukushimaDiary.com. You can go there yourself. The guy does great work in keeping abreast of what's really going on in Fukushima. But this is a game changer. It's a game changer. It's far worse than Chernobyl was. And no one can live in Chernobyl. And no one will ever live in Fukushima again. This is what happens. This is called a radiological bomb, in essence. When radioactivity goes over an area, that's it. You don't go back there in 6 months. You never go back there. And that's why Chernobyl is like a ghost town. You can go into Chernobyl for like a few hours, and you wear a protective suit and breathing apparatus, and then there's an implement on your clothes which tells you how many rads you've been exposed to. And when you reach a certain level, you've got to get out of there. It's no longer safe. You can go in there on a day pass to Chernobyl, and it's creepy. It's a ghost town because everybody's left. Well, Fukushima is exactly the same way. Fukushima is exactly the same way. It'll never be what it used to be. It'll never return to what, you know, the little quiet fishing village that it was, where people had a nice life and farms and everything else. And now we're already seeing the effects of radiation and the spike of weird birth rates and thyroid cancer and other cancers, birth defects, all this stuff. It's all starting to happen. So when you read the prophetic literature about a third of the waters, it makes you wonder whether somehow Fukushima is tied into that. Now, I don't know, but that's why it's in the book. That's why we talk about it. You see, what we're doing here, Patrice, you know, there's 22 chapters in the book, 21 chapters in the book, and we won't have time to go through every single one of them. But when we start, if it was just one of these, wars and rumors of wars, then you can kind of go, well, okay. But then you add the financial collapse, the Fukushima disaster, the animal and fish die-off, the 1 billion aborted babies since Roe v. Wade, the bizarre weather patterns, the earthquakes, the volcanoes, the famines. It's like it's all happening at the same time. And the purpose of the book is I call it, the subtitle is an end times handbook. If these are the end times, then as a watchman, if I don't tell you what I see, I'm not doing my job. I'm not. And you know what? It's not a happy-go-lucky story. But then Yeshua, Jesus, warns us, and this is what he says prophetically 2,000 years ago. And you remember, when he says this, there's no church. There's no Vatican or churches or cathedrals or Billy Graham's or, you know, Bible as we know it today. None of this exists. Nothing. There's the Tanakh, what we call the Old Testament. That's it. And Yeshua is running around with 12 guys, and they ask him, what will be the sign at the end of the age? And he says this laundry list, as I call it, and he calls events out with great specificity. And he says, this will be the sign of the end of the age. And he says this. And the first one is mind-blowing. He goes, many will come in my name and say, I am the Messiah. Don't believe them. I'm paraphrasing. Do we realize what an absurd statement it is, and a statement that's quite frankly filled with hubris over almost 2,000 years ago? Because remember, when he says this, no one knows who he is. There's no PR firm. There's no internet. There's no TV talking about this stuff. And he's crucified a couple of years after he says this statement. And, of course, we believe he rose from the dead, and his blood sacrifice redeems all of us if we want it. By asking, we can be redeemed. We can have right standing with the real God of the universe, and that's what he came to do. And, of course, everywhere he goes, goodness follows him. He heals people are demonized. The demons are cast out. I mean, it's just on and everywhere he goes, goodness follows. But then he gives this laundry list, this punch list. Many will come in my name saying I am the Messiah. Don't believe them. Then he says there'll be wars and rumors of war. Check. There'll be famines, pestilence. Check, check. Earthquakes in diverse places. What? Do you realize when he writes this, Patrice, when he says this 2,000 years ago, almost 2,000 years ago, there's no way to track an earthquake. If you lived in the Galilee, how would you know about the Fukushima earthquake if it happened, you know, 2,000 years ago? You wouldn't. You wouldn't know about any earthquakes except if it happened right under your own feet. And he sort of throws us a prophetic bone by saying there'll be earthquakes in diverse places. My iPhone pings anything over a 6.0 on the globe. That's how wired together we are. And now the rise of the 8.0 and the 9.0 is becoming more and more commonplace. There's definitely a spike in earthquakes, so much so that in Oklahoma they used to have two. The average was around two a year. In 2015, they are slated for almost 600 earthquakes. So, you know, earthquakes in diverse places. I mean, I think that's Oklahoma. Why not? That's a diverse place, specifically from Galilee. And now we hear about this stuff. So, you know, when we look at the punch list that he gives us, everything that we mentioned that I just said becomes a chapter in the book. And then we elaborate from there.
The book is so informative, and the arguments are so very well made. Now, we're probably about 10 minutes from the conclusion of the show. L.A., I wondered if you wanted to mention the Luciferian conspiracy. You have an interesting scenario there where the present King Abdullah of Jordan could actually become king of Iraq with capital in Babylon and be given authority to grant the land for the building of the third temple in Jerusalem. And you also mentioned that E.T. Relationship to the great falling away, the deception of cosmic proportions, and a church falling victim to the false E.T. message.
A lot to talk about there. 9-11, and again, for those of you who think I'm wearing a tinfoil hat here, I'm not. What we need to understand is this, that there are over 1,500 architects and engineers who are calling for an independent investigation into the events of 9-11. And the reason for this is this. Building 7 falls at free fall speed. And as the NITS investigation with Duke University stated, it's the first modern steel high-rise building to collapse in history due to a fire. Okay? Fires don't melt steel like this. And the fact that that Building 7 came down literally at free fall speed into its own footprint tells us what we are looking at is a weapon that we're not sure of, but it looks a lot like controlled demolition. And that's why 1,500 engineers and architects, that's what they do for a living. They know this stuff and they go, it's impossible. You've justified the laws of physics and you can't do that. The events of 9-11 were tragic. And 3,000 people died, and I get that. But the official version of events, I don't believe for 1 minute anymore. And that basically impugns the administration and those who are, you know, on the inside of a loop. It was also an excuse to go into Afghanistan, because that's where the boogeyman Osama was. Meanwhile, last time I checked, George W. Bush stated on the carrier, mission accomplished. As he flies in on his little jet and gets out of his, you know, what a great photo op, huh? And everybody, you know, waves the American flag, and it's very jingoistic and everything else. Okay, I get that. But what if those people had nothing to do with it? Yeah, planes slam into the buildings. I get that. But what if it had nothing to do with the boogeyman, Osama? What if? And what if Obama, who says he kills Osama, didn't kill Osama at all? What if Benatar Bhutto actually said by accident that Osama bin Laden died in Iran several years earlier? And then a couple right after she said that, she's gunned down in an assassination. How does that work out? And why is it that after the elusive boogeyman, Osama bin Laden, is found and finally shot, why is it that there are no pictures of him? Why is it that the body is immediately disposed of at sea? Why is that? Whereas we can go on YouTube and we can watch the hanging of Saddam Hussein and we can look at the autopsy of Uday and Qusay. So we know that they were killed. We know that. And we know Saddam was hung. We know that. But with Osama? Oh, no, we have to respect our Muslim brethren and bury him at sea. What? You really believe that? I mean, are you talking wag the dog here? I think so. Oh, and by the way, last year in 2014, and we'll probably have new results for 2015, in 2014, there was a record opium harvest in Afghanistan. A record opium harvest in Afghanistan. The figure that we came across was well over $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Who benefits from that? Who's brokering it? Why is heroin, and apparently in the surrounding countries, heroin's cheaper than milk. Heroin is cheaper. You can buy heroin over there cheaper than you can buy a carton of milk. That's how crazy it is. And, of course, the Russians are paying the price for it because the addiction level in the surrounding countries is through the roof. So who profits from a $1 trillion opium harvest? And you would think that if we were really concerned about the Afghan people and about their economy and their well-being, wouldn't we bomb the opium fields? Wouldn't we torch the opium fields? Oh, and while I'm at it, what about the rich Afghans who sodomized the 12-year-old boys? And then our people were told to look the other way. I mean, are you kidding me? I've talked to our blood and treasure, Patrice, who were over there. And they all tell me it's just like Vietnam. It's just a useless war. It's all political. Somebody's making a lot of money. So here's the deal. And I don't know how this is going to work out. But the King of Jordan does control the Temple Mount. And when the Iraqis started working on their constitution years ago, almost over a decade ago, the King of Jordan offered to set up a constitutional monarchy in Iraq. Of course, he was rejected. Now with the rise of ISIS and the burning of the Jordanian pilot, will we see the King of Jordan enter the fray? He's a Hashemite king. Hashem is the uncle of Muhammad. The Hashemites are direct relations to Muhammad. And so he holds great sway in the Islamic world, both in Sunni and Shia branches of Islam. So it'd be very interesting to see, with all the quagmire and the tumult in Iraq, that the King of Jordan would set up a constitutional monarchy in that country. And then, because Jordan is actually populated by about 75% so-called Palestinian people, he would then give Jordan to the Palestinians, thereby solving the decades-old conundrum and tension of having the Palestinians have their own autonomous land. And that would be a game changer. And then, of course, because he is the king and he does control the Temple Mount, he would allow the Israelis to build the third temple on the Temple Mount. Now, the King of Jordan right now is the only man on the planet who controls the Waqf. The Waqf, W-A-Q-F, is the body of men that control the Temple Mount. They answer only to King Abdullah II of Jordan. And so that's what's going on. It's all in real time. It is fascinating to watch. But again, it is, in my opinion, absolutely chaotic, and that's why the title of the book is The Days of Chaos, an End Times Handbook, and you can avail yourself of what I feel is vital information by going to www.lamarzulli.net.
L.A., thank you so very much for joining us today for this excellent discussion. Again, I would like to remind the listeners that L.A.'s latest work, his latest book, Days of Chaos, and the latest documentary of L.A. Marzulli and Richard Shaw, Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, are available at the lamarzulli.net and lamarzulli.wordpress.com websites. Now, Vernell, any comments on hearing this interview and being our wonderful co-host? Also, L.A., your final comments.
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead, Doctor. I was just really, really impressed, and I feel very enlightened with all of the information you've shared with us. And I hope our listening audience will take heed and get a hold of that book, and hopefully you will be able to produce an audiobook version of it.
Well, I certainly appreciate the kudos. And we might be doing an audiobook in the future. It is available, or will be available on Kindle very soon. And I guess my final words is this. If you think you know who Yeshua is, but you don't know him personally, then you don't know him. You might think he has something to do with the Pope coming over with all the guys in funny hats and robes and jewels and all the other nonsense and the Pope-mobile. That's not who he is. You might think he's had something to do with all the churches you see in your neighborhood with, you know, stained glass windows and choirs and the Hallelujah Chorus. That's not who he is. If you don't know him, if you think you know him and you don't know him, then you don't know him. And I would suggest if you want to know who he is, read the Gospel of John. Just sit quietly. It's in the New Testament. Read the Gospel of John. And you're going to see who he was, what he claimed to be, and what he did. Everywhere he went, goodness. People got healed. People got delivered. The sick were healed. The dead were raised. And then he rose again from the dead 3 days after he was brutally crucified. He is the Savior of the world, in my opinion. He is the one true God. He will return soon, just as it was prophesied. His feet will touch the Mount of Olives. That baby will split in two. He's coming back to Jerusalem, not to Paris or Moscow or Detroit or Walla Walla, Michigan. He's coming back to Jerusalem. And that's my last word. If you think you know him, but you don't know him, then you don't know him. And you might want to investigate who he said he is and how you can know him, because it's very simple.
Thank you again, L.A. Thank you, Vernell. And thanks to everyone for joining us this evening. I'm wishing everyone, including our listeners globally, a great weekend and week ahead. Good day, everyone.
That was great. Thanks, Patrice. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you. I think Joe has just hung up now with his other. God bless you, L.A. That was superb. Oh, my Vernell, thank you so much, too. What a wonderfully informative hour. Thanks, L.A.
I appreciate it. Always, you know, I love the way you, just your questions are always incredible, and it's always great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on, Patrice. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure and honor. Have a great day there, and hope to hear from you soon.
Absolutely. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.